Rebecca Cohen.
And I'm Rosie Knight.
And this is The Sauce, the pop culture podcast where we drink Bloody Marys and ruin the stuff you love.
Yay!
So are you drinking a Bloody Mary, Rosie?
I'm not drinking a Bloody Mary. I lied. It's a lie.
You're putting a lie to our tagline. So am I. I'm not drinking a Bloody Mary either. What are you having?
Well, it's very hot here. It's like 100 degrees, so I'm just drinking like a nice locally brewed, it's like a grapefruit ale from the Long Beach Brewing Company, which is like a local brewer's. It's very refreshing.
Sounds appropriate for the hot weather. I'm drinking a Not Your Father's Root Beer from Small Town Brewery. It's an alcoholic root beer, except it's not actually root beer. It's just beer that's made to be flavored like root beer, but it tastes exactly like root beer, and it's alcoholic. I thought that it would be appropriate since we are doing our first sort of themed episode.
Yeah.
Which is Harry Potter themed. We're going to talk all about the Harry Potter franchise and our thoughts about it. And so, I don't know, it's kind of like butter beer. It's alcoholic root beer.
Oh, I like that.
See, I tied it in. So, this episode is going to be a little different from what we usually do.
Yes.
Instead of talking about various topics in pop culture from the week, we're going to focus on one specific topic, which is, as I said, Harry Potter.
Woo!
Because not this week, but a couple weeks ago was the 20th anniversary of the release of the book Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Yes.
As it was titled in Britain, which is where it was originally released. though Americans know it as the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, weird.
So, Rosie, you ready to get into some Harry Potter conversation?
I'm so unbelievably ready. Harry Potter is one of my favorite things to love slash hate slash rant about, so I'm here for it. So, what are your, like, first memories of Harry Potter?
I remember when it came out in the States in the later 90s. I wasn't that young at the time. I was past the age that it was aimed for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it was such a huge phenomenon. And everyone was reading it and talking about it. So I read it. You were just about the right age when it came out, weren't you?
Yeah, I read it. I got it from my classroom. I was in year 5 in England, which is, I think, still elementary school for you guys. And I was, I guess if it was 20 years ago, I was literally 8 when it came out. So I was like just about to do that transition. I was like a couple of years away from being 11, like the kids in the book, you know, and I was like a voracious reader. So I borrowed it. I read it in like a day. And I actually remember the first time I read it, I didn't like it that much because I felt like it was like, I felt like it was like I was very precocious child. And I felt like it's really similar to this book that I really did love called The Worst Witch, which is basically like an amazing.
Yeah. I love The Worst Witch. Yeah. I only know The Worst Witch from the television.
Oh, did they have the show here?
There was a movie.
Oh my God,
I don't know
if
it was a series.
Dude, there's a whole series, a BBC Kids TV series that was like the best thing ever about Mildred Hubble and stuff. And that was like my fave. And I got caught up in it probably when like the second book came out because my mum worked in a bookshop, and by that point it had the little bit of traction where people were excited about it and I really liked the second one, and then by that point I felt like I was like invested in it, and then by the third one it was like cultural phenomenon, people queuing up at a bookshop at midnight, like the kind of thing that had never really happened before, you know.
So I'm curious, when you said that you didn't love the first one, what was it that you didn't love? It was just that it was too much like The Worst Witch? Or was there other things
also,
you didn't like?
Also, it had a boy as like the main character. I remember spending a lot of the first time that I read that book thinking that Hermione should have been the main character because she solves everything.
Right.
Like when they get into the end sequence, they, you know, she solves the stuff, and then I think it's Ron wins the chess game actually, because it's meant to be a parable about working together, I guess.
Right, of course.
But at the time, I was like, this clever girl, you know, should have been the person. But also at that age, I was in a I was in a stage where I was like rarely reading kids books at that point. Like I was doing like a full Matilda, and I was like reading embarrassing, boring, precocious, like Great Expectations, like books that I couldn't even really understand just because I wanted to read so much. Like I used to read like 3 books in a week and stuff, you know? I think I didn't get the magic of it, but Harry Potter did become something for me that even into my like late teens, if I was like feeling shitty, I could like pick up one of those books and it would give me like a good nostalgia, you know, like really immersive thing. I still love Harry Potter now for all its faults.
Well, I found on the first read that it was very engaging, very absorbing and fun to read. I can't deny that. But I was pretty underwhelmed by it. Everyone was so jazzed about it, and they were talking about it like it was going to save literacy in America. Like all the children that weren't interested in reading were now going to be excited about it because of Harry Potter and blah, blah, blah. I know. And it really kind of underwhelmed me on the whole, because like you said, it's like I've already seen the whole school for wizards thing in The Worst Witch and other things. I'd already seen a lot of stories with the kid who thinks he's an ordinary kid and then finds out he's really secretly a wizard.
It's always a white dude. It's Luke Skywalker. It's Neo from The Matrix. You know, it's every Avatar character.
Or Tim from Books of Magic.
Yeah.
Which a comic book that had come out like right around the same time, but a little bit earlier, and had a very similar looking protagonist. He was like a white kid with glasses and black hair who finds out he's a wizard. So it didn't seem super duper original to me. And I get that in a lot of ways, she was deliberately not being original. She was taking characters and creatures and all these different elements, familiar elements from mythology and fantasy. Yeah. And putting them together in a way that was pretty coherent. So it wasn't meant to be startlingly original or anything, but it also felt largely like a retread of a lot of other kids' books and other properties.
I find that kind of funny as well, because like, I definitely think that's one of those things that kills a lot of enjoyment for me, even as an adult, is like the hype machine. And the reality of Harry Potter, when you read it, I'll never forget, I was like really high. I was like 18. I was living with my boyfriend. And he sat me down. He was very like cynical, grumpy guy who only liked cool stuff. So he really didn't want me to like Harry Potter, you know? And I never forget that he like sat down and read me a page of Harry Potter in this really just monotone voice. And I realized that how like technically badly written it is. Like,
because
it's not badly written because of the grammar, but it is essentially just a more descriptive version of one of those like Jack and John books or Jane and John, you know, like most of the pages are like, what are you doing? Hermione said, Harry said.
Funny. It's funny that you say that, because I do remember thinking early on that she wrote them like she intended them to be adapted for screen. Mm-hmm. Like everything was very sort of, it was like a script.
Yeah.
It was like an overly detailed script. Like there was not a huge amount of internal life.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a huge amount of psychology or anything that couldn't easily be translated into a screenplay. There's a lot of what you see and what you hear, which is what is in a screenplay.
And I totally agree with that. And I think one of the most interesting things is like a lot of people will be like, oh, but it was for kids or whatever, right? But I don't think that kids stuff has to be simplistic. Like there's no reason for that. Like, especially coming from, that book was coming off the end of an era where PG films had been like horrifying and existential and, you know, actually really like inspiring to a lot of us, like Dark Crystal and Neverending Story and these films that dealt with really deep, complex topics that are not really narratively straightforward. And and it's the same with like Ghibli. Like Ghibli makes these complex movies, even the most simple of Miyazaki's movies, like Totoro, right? That movie still, it does really complex things that most mainstream Hollywood films don't do, where it will just show people like being still and like taking a breath. And that gives those characters that space and that kind of like psychological, like more humane depth than say, and I agree with you, like, this, I feel like this really almost ushered in that like books for optioning age, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it might have just happened to time wise, you know, come into being around the time when that was happening a lot. But yeah, the relationship between the books and the movies is an interesting one that I would like to talk about in a few minutes when we talk about a little bit more expansively about looking back over the years. But just back to the topic of first impressions, I definitely noticed that there wasn't much psychology to it. And that bothered me. I read a lot of children's literature. I always have. I'm an educator. And I also just love kids' books. I generally read them more than I read other kinds of books. So it's comparing Harry Potter against what's out there in great children's literature. It's like, great children's literature can be wonderfully complex. It can be psychologically very interesting, thematically very deep. It can explore difficult topics, or it can even explore seemingly mundane topics, but that are of deep meaning to children.
Yeah.
You know, and have deep import to them. And it can do it in an emotionally resonant way. I felt like a lot of everything that happened in Harry Potter was external action. Harry gets these external challenges through the book, but he never really has any internal challenges.
Yeah.
In that first book.
It gets a little bit better. A kid who's an orphan and has lived in an abusive house his whole life, you'd think there would be a lot of those that he would be needing to go through.
there's like one scene, you know, where he faces the mirror and his parents are in it and he wants to stay there and maybe not continue his journey, but he realizes it's not real. Like that's the only moment I can think of in the book where Harry's challenged in some psychological or emotional way that goes beyond some, like, there's a troll in the bathroom. How do I fight it? You know? And it also bothered me that all of the challenges he faces, he doesn't solve any of them. He's really quite a passive character.
Oh, he's so passive. He's, like, very much, if you do a study of, like, an avatar character and a character who, like, your target audience of a white male can just project themselves onto, Harry Potter every time. Because Harry Potter doesn't have any memorable lines.
Yeah,
the bits that people relate to in those films and in the books are not things to do with Harry Potter. They're to do with Hermione punching Draco. They're to do with, like, you know, Ron making a silly comment while he, like, has a magical chocolate frog in his mouth or whatever. You know, it's the Han Solo thing. It's like you always remember Han's lines, not Luke's.
We've talked about our first impressions, but now let's look back and talk about how we view it through the lens of 20 years later. Now that it has been a long time, there have been all these movies, theme park rides, product tie-ins, plays, fan fiction. It's a whole cultural phenomenon.
Yeah. Harry Potter is like my ultimate problematic fave. But I still love Harry Potter, and like I go to Universal Studios Harry Potter World and it's like super magical, and I still watch the movies and I read hella fan fiction and I write articles about Harry Potter picking apart the world.
You wrote the funniest article. Everyone should definitely check out Rosie's article on Nerdist about how dark the Harry Potter world actually is when you look at it.
And that's like, that's one of my all-time favorite topics. Harry Potter, I feel like is so ripe for being like picked apart because there's such an expansive world and it goes over so many different mediums that it's very fun to be like, you know, Arthur Weasley, he is in a quite high role in government in charge of knowing about muggles, but he doesn't know how a plug socket works.
Right. No, he doesn't know anything. I mean, it's played for
humor.
How can
that be your job? Right. How can that be your job?
I mean, I get the joke of it. Like it's humor that, ha ha, he's in charge of knowing about muggles and he knows nothing and the wizards know nothing. But that becomes
the practical reality.
Easy to laugh off as she establishes things like that the wizard government does have contact with the muggle government and they're in cooperation together specifically
and, like,
because they're being threatened
next to it.
Right, you know, like still, within
you
it.
You go into King's Cross and you go to a wizard school. You go into behind King's Cross and you go into Diagon Alley. Like, these are not separate places. I get that there's like spells or whatever.
Right, no, but
such a terrifyingly enclosed society.
They're so closed off. It doesn't make any sense because they have to live among Muggles. Like, how can you properly even hide yourself from Muggles if you don't know enough about Muggles?
Yeah. Exactly. They're always wearing dumb clothes. Like, and I know she plays it for like this funny joke, but yeah, it's one of those things. Like, I think like we were saying before, as well, that once you go past the most shallow reading of it, and I love that reading. That used to get me through tough nights when I had bad insomnia and stuff, you know, like, but sometimes as soon as you just pick through it, it just gets so messed up. Like, how come, you know, these kids go to school, right? The entire wizarding system is based on a world where nobody learns maths, science, or English after the age of 11. What the fuck? Well,
presumably they don't learn science at all because they have magic instead, which is a really interesting thought.
That is so true because that's why they don't know how, like, a plug socket works. And the other thing to me is, like, so what, you're telling me that magic just makes electricity or makes light? It's still electricity. It would still surely work in a similar way.
It is.
That's how things exist. That's the thing. They don't live in a non-tangible, non-science-based world because the world is the same as humans.
Right. They live in the same world. But it's interesting to me that Hogwarts is basically a trade school.
Yeah.
They learn how to do magic. They learn the how of magic, but do they study the mechanisms, like why that works? How does the light emanate from your wand?
Yeah, ironically, Snape is like the closest you come to someone like that because a potions class, you literally have to understand what each part is doing. That's like the closest they come to like a chemistry or science.
Sure, but like, when you start studying chemistry in high school, it goes beyond, well, if you mix that chemical with that chemical, it's going to have this effect. Like, you learn about atoms and...
Yeah. And you also can't just randomly make people, like, fall
electrons,
in love with you.
Yeah, and what happens, you know, what the different elements are and what happens when you put them together on a molecular level, on an atomic level. Are they learning about magic on that level? Do they have, like, inquiry-based learning? Do they have any inquiry-based field of study?
I know, I'm like, I wish that I had a science background because I would love to write that book. Like a book where it's like kids at like a really scholarly, science-based magic school where they're learning all about the way that science does work.
You write that down because that's going to be a good story.
Right?
But yeah, they don't learn math, which you'd think they would need for things like oceans and other stuff. They do learn history, but it's like the history of magic.
Yeah.
I feel like they should learn Muggle history.
They're in London, like a lot of the time they're in London, they're in Scotland and stuff. Was there wizard evacuees? Like, Hogwarts is like in the middle of the country, so surely they could have opened their doors to some evacuees when World War II happened. These motherfuckers,
during the Blitz?
You know, they can't protect the school from just like 50 Death Eaters shooting sparks at the school, but you're telling me what they're going to be able to protect it from, a bomb.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting question. Although that brings me to my biggest annoyance with the series in general, which is the whole system of magic. This wand-based magic system drives me up the fucking wall.
Oh, my
because
God.
Because, basically, there's a lot of talk at Hogwarts, a lot of talk around the idea that some people are more powerful wizards than others, right?
Yeah.
That Dumbledore is super powerful, and that Voldemort is super powerful, and Harry, too.
Ginny is, like, hinted at as being this, like, really powerful witch.
Yeah, Harry has the potential to be super powerful, though he doesn't really exhibit it. But it's never clear why one person is stronger than someone else is at magic. And it's not like in Star Wars, you can say you're strong in the Force.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like they need they're going to be like 20 years later, she'll be like, magic midichlorians.
Yeah.
They're like, they got that good blood.
Yeah,
you know, it goes against the weird blood purity kind of analogies they're always making.
Exactly. But it's implied that it could be through study, right? Because Hermione's very good at magic. She gets all A's in her classes and studies and practices.
But I feel like they play that weird double-edged sword with her. And this is what always pissed me off and confused me about the magic stuff, where it's like, she's like almost like too technically good, but she doesn't have like the passion or like raw talent in her heart or something. You know, that fucked up like sort of almost elitism against studying and caring about stuff.
But by all logic, she should be the most powerful wizard because they go to school and they have to study and do homework and learn shit, and that's supposed to make them be competent or better wizards. So it seems like the one who works hardest and is smartest should be the best.
Yeah, but she then time travels to go to two different classes.
Right, but then the thing is, when it comes down to it, when you're in a wizard battle with another wizard, what does it come down to?
Yeah.
It comes down to how quick you are on the draw. The first person to pull their wand, and who has better aim.
Yeah, and who is willing to do a killing spell. Because once you bring that spell in, you lose to everyone who says Avada Kedavra because you die.
Well, that's true, but if you're quicker, if your reflexes are quicker, you can do Expelliarmus before they get a chance to say Avada Kedavra. Like, that's all you need as a wizard to protect yourself is Expelliarmus and be super quick.
All you need is good reflexes.
It's That's all about like, good reflexes. After like years of study at school and all this stuff, what it comes down to seems to be quick reflexes. And the Avada Kedavra spell, like, apparently is about the same thing as shooting someone, right?
How is
it meaningfully different from having a gun?
This is the weirdest thing as well, is like you said, like in the end, after all these years of study and everything, it comes down to, like, are you fastest? Like, are you most willing to, like, kill? And do you know why that is? It's because when is the wizard ethics class? I never see them. I never see them, like, teaching the kids. Like, it's not like karate where they're, like,
Don't they have, like, a philosophy of magic class or something?
Not that I think they have history of magic where they just talk about how boring it is.
Yeah.
They're always like, oh, history of magic, the worst. Never learn from our mistakes. Oh, what a surprise. The populist fascism has risen again. I wonder why that could be. Oh, history of magic. Because
everyone
is
hates history of magic.
Yeah, because, like, the thing is to me is, like, you know how that you could stop that and it would actually be about studies if, like, they taught the kids, like, this holistic way of, like, learning magic and, like, knowing how to use it responsibly. But the teachers do stuff like they'll turn a kid into a fucking ferret as a punishment. How are these kids meant to learn anything? What I always wondered, Jeff, where's like the HR department at that school? Who is in charge of hiring? Because literally, well, if it's Dumbledore, he's a prick anyway. Because like in the last book, he hires a guy specifically to bait like Voldemort and like find out where one of the Horcruxes is. So it makes a lot of sense if he's in charge. Because what about that guy who they hire who basically brainwashed someone, stole their memories, and pretended he was a famous explorer. And then not only did he try and kill Harry and Ron by leaving them with a basilisk so he could act like he was like, oh, sorry, I couldn't save them, I'll write a book about it, but he also Harry had a broken arm and he magicked all the bones out of it.
Fuck? The whole point was that he was completely incompetent and was an imposter. But I guess you could say that there's like a curse placed on the defense of the dark arts teacher position. So somehow only evil or incompetent people can be in it.
Well, that's not necessarily true because that was Remus's job.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Yeah, no, I think Snape's evil. I mean, technically, it is like cursed because like he was a werewolf,
whatever. Right?
But also, I mean, it's just less to do. It's just again, like I love Remus. He's a nice guy. I truly ship him and Sirius forever. I don't believe he married Tonks, but like, I also, even though I love him, Dumbledore, why are you hiring a werewolf? That's a bad look. There's kids. Those kids are always sneaking around the fucking grounds. You know?
Yeah.
Well, first year. Hiring this guy, always wearing a turban, never takes it off. Guess why? Voldemort's head's on the back of his head. Like, what the fuck? How is Dumbledore meant to be the most fucking smartest, most powerful wizard in the world, and he never sensed that?
Maybe he did. Maybe it was all part of his grand plan.
Oh, You know what, actually, you're right. It definitely was, because from the beginning, he knew Harry had to die so Voldemort could die. Yeah, so he was ready. He was. Right. That's even darker when you think, like, he's like, okay, this kid's coming. He's had a real bad life. He's been abused his whole life. And, you know, I'm hiring this guy. I think he definitely has
Voldemort
on the back of his head, most powerful wizard of all time. And I'm going to send this 11-year-old kid in just to die. Because that's the thing. Dumbledore probably never wanted Harry to live. No. But now I think about it, because he would have needed to kill the Horcruxes.
Yeah,
and no, even then, I'm like, why isn't Dumbledore fighting Voldemort himself? Like, I still, that's the main thing.
Well, like, only, they had the prophecy, right? I don't know. I can't parse that shit.
No. This is the thing. The prophecy is the real answer. And we know that. But that's what's so fun about it, is like, all of this is just ridiculously hypothetical, because none of it's fucking real, you know? But it's so much fun to just be like, it's outrageous. Send an 11-year-old, didn't even know he was a magician till 6 months ago, and you're just going to give him a fucking wand and be like, go fight this back-of-the-head wizard. Oh.
No, I like the part where Harry's name comes out of the cup in the Goblet of Fire, and they know someone's fucked with it because his name can't be in there. But they're like, well, there's nothing we can do.
Yeah, it's
go fight
lore.
Those dragons. Like, you're just gonna have to go and possibly die.
Yeah, and in the movie, Dumbledore's like real mad at him, like, Harry, how did you do this? Like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, and Harry's like, I'm dumb. I don't even, like, I probably don't even pass any of my classes.
He can't even pass a class without Hermione helping him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing.
That
bothers the fuck out of me. Like, why would they not care about their classwork? They're learning magic. Like, I could kind of get it if Ron thinks it's mundane because he grew up with it. And for him, like, mostly when he sees magic, it's his mom doing housework. But for Harry, this is like, you've been a muggle all your life for all you know. You've been powerless and helpless in this horrible situation. You find out you're a wizard. And not only that, you find out that you have to face the scariest, most powerful fucking evil wizard that's ever been, is like out to get you, killed your parents, and wants to finish the job with you. Like, study. Crack a fucking book.
If Dumbledore knew that, why wasn't he just training Harry from the beginning? Like, that's why. Yeah. Why did the kids have to start an illegal child army, in a fucking basement or something, in the fucking room of retirement, like, but to fight?
At that point, the Ministry of Magic had taken over the school, and Dolores Umbridge was in charge. But it's like, I do feel like maybe Dumbledore should have started before that.
You know what I mean? Defense Against the Dark Arts, but they're like, he's like, he knows that Voldemort's back. He's purposefully hiring like bad teachers in the one lesson that might actually help people stop Voldemort, which is Defense Against the Dark Arts. And he just can't hire a good teacher to save his life. You know, those kids, I'm surprised any of those kids survived.
Yeah. No, it's quite surprising.
And also, like, one of the things I think is so fucked up about Hogwarts, right, apart from the fact it's obviously like a private school, because they I wrote in my article that it was a private school, and someone was like, once 5 years ago, J.K. Rowling said it was not a private school. And I'm like, well, she can say that all she wants, because in the book, which is the only canon there is, he's like, I can't afford to go to school. And the Dursleys are like, we won't pay for him. And Hagrid's like, don't worry, you can afford it because your parents are fucking rich. These political dissident parents somehow have this bank full of
enormous
money.
Enormous fortune.
In this fucking weird, dodgy, slave-run bank.
That gets to a whole bunch of issues in this book, okay? So, like, if Hogwarts costs money, that's like, weird and fucked up. Although it would explain why the Weasleys are so poor.
Yeah, and why everyone in the school is white.
Yeah, right? But if it doesn't cost money, then who the hell pays for it? Like, what's going on? Who's paying for it?
And where does the infrastructure come from? Are there wizard taxes?
Yes. I their whole economy, I really have to question. Okay. So first of all, they don't have any fiat currency, right? Oh. They pay for things literally in gold.
Yeah. And just right? coins. It's like gold, bronze, and silver or whatever.
Yeah. They're not even on like the gold standard. No. It's literally gold. They're using gold coins. They don't have the concept of a fiat currency,
and they don't have like if you have magic, You would assume that they would have made like a magic credit card. I'm going to magic some money from me to you or something.
Yeah,
you know?
That seems a pretty simple thing to
also,
do.
Or like if you were using gold, surely there would also be a bartering culture. But I feel like they never look at that. Like if you're going back to a culture where you're using gold and silver and stuff, then it would make sense that it was more of like a bartering culture.
Yeah, no.
It's like normal capitalism, but people use fucking gold.
Yes, exactly.
Which means that if they went to the muggle world, they could spend the shit out of that. They would be so much richer.
That's true.
And like that was, I love that. Those are the things as well about that economy that really makes me laugh. Is like they'll go like they're wizards and their whole society is based on this idea of like this infinite secrecy. And if it breaks, then oh, it's gonna die. Everyone's gonna be terrible. But then like the adults will like go out in like a bright pink cloak and try and get on the fucking tube. With a massive gold coin.
Well, I don't understand how that works. The travel between the muggle world and the wizard world. Like they have whole towns, right? That are hidden from muggle view. Not just hidden from view, but they're like on another plane of existence or something because they're not like physically there.
Well, no. This is the thing. From what I understand from like my research, I'm reading those books a lot. They are there. But they have these weird shields where, like, if a muggle gets too near to them, you'll be like, oh, no, I forgot to pick up my kid from school. Or, oh, no, my house is on fire. So it's based on this, like, weird fucking... So basically, they're just constantly mind-fucking muggles.
Yeah.
To keep them away.
There's a weird thing where they have the Wizard World Cup, and they have to find a field to have it in.
Yeah.
So, like, they have whole towns. They have like that are hidden from view. Like, there's this entire existence with millions of people whose lives are completely hidden from view for muggles. But they don't have a space where they can have a Quidditch tournament.
Yeah, and also that like hundreds of thousands of people go to from all over the world.
Yeah,
and also there are a lot of people in that society who are muggles. That's the main thing I don't understand. It's like, so what is it, like Scientology? Yeah. Like, if you're a muggle, you go to the wizarding world and you have to shun your family or something.
Yeah,
because, like, you can't tell them you're a wizard. I mean, Hermione's family did know she went to Harry Potter, so I guess if you're a kid, your parents would know if you got an acceptance letter.
The parents have to know if you're going to Hogwarts, right?
Yeah.
The parents have to know. So there's, like, a lot of trust going on there. Where
I find that really funny. The reliance on like a 10-year-old who can do a killing spell, going back and fucking everything up for you by showing off to his mates.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of trust there that the muggle-born kids aren't going to just fuck everything up for everybody. that's pretty amazing that hasn't happened. There's also with the economics. There's this weird, wealth and poverty stuff going on where like the Weasleys have trouble making ends meet, but like the Malfoys are super rich and they're like old money.
Yeah.
And Harry apparently is old money too.
Yeah.
But it's not exactly
clear
where that money comes from. So there's this weird like class thing going on.
Yeah, where people are either abjectly poor, super rich, or muggles. That's like the three class systems. And
right.
The muggles are kind of middle class. Like Hermione's parents are like dentists.
Right. Right. And it's associated with snobbery and it's sort of like connected into the whole Death Eaters and their racial hierarchy thing, right? Because the Death Eaters have this idea about purity, racial purity of wizards. They want no muggle-borns. They want no mudbloods, they call them. And they, I guess there's also mixed people who could have one wizard parent and one not, I guess.
Yeah, and you're still a mudblood if you have that. Like, if you've got any muggle blood, they call you that. But also, like, that whole thing is so weird because it doesn't stand up as, like, an allegory. And it really makes no sense because it sets up this, on a deeper level, it's a really problematic trope where it's like this, like, the noble poor. You know, like, they don't have any money, but they live a wholesome life.
Right,
you know,
exactly. They have love.
They have love.
Family.
They have thousands of children because, like, they're poor, but, like, they don't care that they don't have enough to feed their kids. Just want to keep popping kids out because
they're redheaded. And
they're Irish gypsy stereotype.
So obviously supposed to be Irish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that weird Irish stereotype thing going on. And you have this, like, oh, she's making a comment about racism, where it's, you know, pure wizard blood is standing in for whiteness or, you know, white supremacy. But then your hero, Harry Potter, is
a white,
pure blood, wealthy, old money wizard.
I think Harry's mom is a muggle. Lily is a muggle.
She's muggle born. That's right.
She's muggle born because she has the sister who is like...
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. At the same time, he still comes from wizard blood. He's not muggle born. He's an old school aristocrat. His family is the fucking Deathly Hallows family, which essentially makes him the first ever wizards. Like, so that is some weird Jesus shit.
Yeah, on his dad's side, he's from like a really like well-respected old wizard.
Yeah, and his dad is like a horrible jock. And you know,
his dad's an asshole.
His dad's a horrible jock who basically like bullied this pretty poor girl into like marrying him, even though she was like had her little goth friend Snape or whatever, you know.
And but she wasn't into the goth friend.
Not. And then that's another thing that kills me is this like eternal desperation to make Snape this like romantic hero who like did it. And it's like, no. He was like a creepy stalker who didn't respect the fact she didn't want to date him. And then, you know, he didn't respect it so much. He essentially became an MRA and joined a fucking white supremacist organization. Then only disjoined the white supremacist organization when someone he cared about could be hurt, Lily. Mm-hmm. And then when she died, Dumbledore began his lifelong manipulation of like forcing him to kind of look after Harry and kind of like he's a farm animal till he's ready to be murdered in a race war. But the worst thing is, Snape couldn't even be nice to him. Like,
well, no,
that's my main thing is like, just like, it's a fucking kid. He didn't know James.
No, but that, you gotta admit, that's a conflict. Snape feels conflicted because, you know, he wants to do right by Lily, but this kid is also the progeny, the offspring of this horrible guy who bullied him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, I think that's one of the most interesting things about Harry Potter is if you read Harry Potter but as a reading of how like flawed adults are, rather than it being actually about like the kids, it's all about adults who just are terrible.
That's true. The adults are pretty terrible. I feel like everyone except maybe Mrs. Weasley are all kind of terrible.
Mrs. Weasley is nice.
She's all right.
Yeah, she's all right. McGonagall, actually quite good through the whole book until the end. Where she just randomly puts all the Slytherin kids in a dungeon. Like, I always felt like that's well harsh. I'm like, look, just because they got put in Slytherin because of your fucking arbitrary talking hat.
You know what? No, I can't blame her for that. I feel like, you know, that's like... in the movie Lean on Me, where Joe Clark has all of the drug dealers kicked out of the school and he locks the doors. Sometimes that's what you got to do. You got to kick the bad kids out.
Realistically, like every Slytherin kid, you maybe see like four of them throughout that whole franchise. And in the book, you read even less about them. There's like four. There's like one girl, Draco, and his two like buds or whatever.
Yeah, his thugs.
And like actually... you know, Harry almost got put into Slytherin. He wouldn't have started suddenly being like an evil Death Eater if he hadn't been. Like, this is like some real fucked up arbitrary, you don't have a choice, this fucking hat picks for you where you're going to be. There's this amazing webcomic, which everyone should read, called, she does a bunch of them, I think. She does like background Slytherin, background Hufflepuff, background Gryffindor, background Raven, and they're just these really cool strip comics, and it'll just be like a Slytherin, and they'll be like in like the herbology department trying to do some work or something. And so, and they'll just be chilling out, and then someone will come in and be like, oh my God, like there's a fucking troll and blah, blah, blah. And they'll like knock over their pots or whatever. And the kid will just be standing there like, I'm just trying to learn magic, you know? And those strips, they really sum up a lot to me about what I find most interesting, which is these poor kids who like are just trying to learn and just like, trying to have like a good time. You know, the kids, what about the kids in Slytherin who actually train really hard to be in Quidditch, yeah? And then right. So Dumbledore's always taking away their fucking house points so that Gryffindor right. can win.
Oh, I gotta say, the house points thing is so rigged.
Dude, it's so bad. They'll be like
biased.
They'll be like, Draco Malfoy, you like, and obviously like, yeah, he's like a terrible like pure blood right. Nazi or whatever, so I got no love for like him in particular. But they'll be like, Draco, you like looked at someone and breathed. Yeah. Minus 10 points. And then it'll be like, ah, and Harry, you get 2 points for eating that sausage in like an interesting manner. And then, oh, what a surprise. That takes them over the edge. Gryffindor.
Right.
And also,
right,
Gryffindor
right.
aren't the underdogs. That's the thing that makes me right. laugh. Is they always paint them like they're this. But they are clearly like, that's the team that everyone wants to be on. They have yes. a roaring lion. They are the jocks.
They are
the
Gryffindors yes.
are the fucking
and
jocks.
Clearly the favorites of any of the competent teachers mm-hmm. and administrators. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really crazily weirdly biased, which is part of what never sat well with me overall in the series. Is like, I like an underdog. I just yeah. feel like kids books in some way the hero should be an underdog.
Yeah, they should. I agree with you. Like, and the thing is yeah. it even the books that like have come after it, I feel like they know that and they don't yeah. necessarily do it well, like say your Twilights or your yeah. Hunger Games. It will always be like they're a bit clumsy, or and they're like right. you know, they don't really talk, they're very antisocial, but at least they try. Whereas Harry is literally thrown into this world where he's the most famous person on earth, he's yeah. the coolest person on earth, he's the richest person on earth, and everyone loves him. Like there's no like adversity there, apart from the fact that this head teacher who's meant to be looking after him in Loco Parentis keeps trying to make him fight a fucking dark wizard.
Yeah, exactly.
If Dumbledore didn't do that shit, Harry would be living a charmed life. To finish on a note of positivity, because we talked about it a lot, you know, yes. what do you still enjoy about Harry Potter when you think about it? Or like, what good things can you take from it?
Okay. So there's so many good things to take from it. We should end by focusing on the positive. So even though a lot of Rowling's magical conceits are derivative, and I think deliberately derivative, and I yeah. don't know that there's anything wrong with that, they have caught people's imagination for a reason. There's a reason everybody wants to go on the Pottermore and find out what, mm-hmm. you know, what do they call it? Which... House they be in.
Yeah, of course. I'm Slytherin.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Are you happy with that?
Well, I am, because I feel like Slytherins are, like, misunderstood. I was happier with it as a kid. Now I feel probably, like, from the yeah. way that I teach and stuff, I'm, like, I probably feel like I'm more like a Hufflepuff, because I really believe in, like, I know that's, like, meant to be uncool. No, but only because, like, if I was picking from the mantras of the houses, I believe mm-hmm. that, like, let everyone in. Teach every kid. Like, right. everyone should deserve an education. That should be the mantra of the whole school, not one fucking right. house. You know? But,
true.
I do think, like, and also those tests are so vague. It'll be like, would you rather, like, walk on a hot beach or in, like, a dark moonlight? And I'll pick, yeah. like, the dark moonlight. It's like, you're a Slytherin, bitch. You're going straight in the dungeon.
Well, that does make me wonder why they have Slytherin at all. Like,
right?
They're like, every evil wizard ever has come from Slytherin.
They
it's like,
literally
why
are
don't
snakes.
You just
they're like, you close, are a snake.
Just close Slytherin. Just don't have right. it anymore. It just seems like a bad idea.
Didn't the founder fucking, like, betrayed yeah. you all or something? Like, why has he even still got a house?
Yeah.
Who knows?
And if you're going to ultimately have to just lock them all up when the shit hits the fan, I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah,
maybe.
Who are you? What house are you in?
I believe I'm Ravenclaw.
I was going to say, you're definitely Ravenclaw.
I might have taken it twice to make sure I got Ravenclaw.
Hey, it happens. Nick got my husband. He got yes. Gryffindor, which is very disappointing to me. So I think he's...
Oh, but that's very him.
I think he's a bit more of a Hufflepuff, because he's like the world's most chill dude. Like, he just would do, he's
that.
Just a nice guy. But yeah, he was quite sad when he realized they were, like, the jocks.
Yeah,
of Hogwarts.
They're the jocks, but they're courageous. chocolates. I guess, than True Heart, some shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm all Ravenclaw all the way. But also, like my Patronus is a squirrel.
Oh, that's pretty rad.
No, that's terrible. That's terrible.
What are you going to do against a Dementor with a squirrel?
Right? It's so embarrassing.
Yeah, for some reason, I like couldn't look into Pottermore, so I never found out what mine was, my Patronus. Oh, yeah.
You really
Man, I have a wand and everything. I went and got a wand when I went to Harry Potter World. Go there, do some magic. It's very cool. I like that. I do think you're right about that thing. Like, it's immersive and people still care about it so much.
Yeah.
You know?
It is a world that, as silly as it is when you even think for a moment about the logic of it, it makes no sense. But
yeah.
There's some fun to it. It is immersive in its way.
And also, fans have made it more. Like, I really love Harry Potter because, like, I've seen so much amazing fan art, even before they cast Hermione as being black in the play, which is amazing, and I totally am here for canon black Hermione. But black fans and black women had already done those fan arts, had done those cosplays, you know, and that, like, that adds such another layer to it, like, all these amazing creators who do that stuff or who create these great fan fictions and stuff. I haven't actually seen the play because obviously when I was in London it was impossible to get tickets to it,
right.
But it has, from what I understand, a very fucking fanfic-esque story. It's outrageous because I got spoiled because I had a little girl who was on work experience with me at the comic shop and she'd read it on Tumblr, and one of the women came in who was working at the theater and the little girl was like, please tell me that is not fucking true. It is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, blah, 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 blah. And then she read it to me and I was like, oh my God, how is this real? So I think like the impact of that fan culture has actually impacted the art itself, you know, and the way
I think that's probably that they tell true,
stories and stuff. And I like that. I think that's.
Yeah. Cool. I like that people are hungry to see it expanded and, you know, learn about wizard academies in North America, even if what J.K. Rowling comes up with is problematic in various ways. And the characters themselves, they are memorable, at least if not Harry. I mean, Harry's sort of iconic looking.
He's got a very iconic character design.
He stands in for your sort of every boy, as in white boy. You know, he's just that kid who is trying his best and there's nothing special about him, and yet he's the most special person in the entire universe. But like, Hermione is a great character. People are right to be excited about Hermione still.
Yeah.
Girls identify with Hermione. Women identify with Hermione. She's smart, and that's like, she...
admirable.
It's glorified. Like, yeah. It's made to be admirable. It's helpful. She saves everybody's ass because she's smart and she raises her hand all the time and knows the right answer every time. And you know what? That saves their asses. And I think a lot of girls who can really relate to that, and, you know, she's got frizzy hair, but it's okay because she can magic that shit out, which she can do. What are you going to do? Yeah, so I do like the characters, particularly Hermione, but there's other characters, there's ancillary characters, the villains, they're strong. The whole world of it, it's just hard not to feel affection toward it and I feel like you want to be part of it.
Yeah, and I think like she managed, one of the things she did so well is she described a visual world, and that I think is what is so strong.
Yeah.
Like, you recognize the world from the book in the films. You recognize the world from the films in the theme park. You recognize that broken down kind of like feudal, almost English, like semi-medieval, but a bit modern. Like, you know, this, like, she created this world. Like, I remember when I was a kid, she did one of the smartest things in the world, which is she made food a big part of her storytelling. And that is one of the most emotive ways of telling a story. You know, and Ghibli is someone who does that so much at their studio, you know, that Miyazaki is a master of making food this comfortable, comforting, memorable thing. And she did that with, like, the feasts, you know, and stuff like that. And I think that she created a world that people were willing to engage with and continue to engage with.
Until you find out all that food is made by slaves.
I know. Come on, JK.
And they, like, They're so happy to be slaves. And then when Hermione tries to help them, everyone's like, don't do that. You're insulting them. I find that so weird. It's like she's making a comment about like the white savior complex. But in order to do so, she's using happy slaves. I don't understand.
She didn't Hermione could have been a very good, or any of those characters, those white wizards, they could have done a good, grief tourism, kind of like white saviorism, going to build a school in in Nigeria or somewhere, some kind of fucked up weird shit. But they didn't. They did it where it was like, she's trying to free slaves. And she was like, I wonder if I can make this an allegory for some kind of colonialism. She's like, yeah, maybe the slaves don't want to be freed. You know the way to think people don't even learn their lesson. Mark Wade made a Champions Avengers comic this week, had a similar thing where Hulk they were trying to free some Muslim people. A Muslim woman who's also an inhuman called Kamala. It's not Ms. Marvel. In an internment camp.
A different one. Inhuman Kamala. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they said to her, we're going to save you from this internment camp. And she was like, no, we don't want to be on the run from the law. We're well treated and looked after here. Hey.
Oh my God.
I know. Oh, that was a topic we could have done.
Oh my God. All right. Well, let's maybe for next time.
Yeah. Right. But Harry Potter, 20 years.
I know. It's such a cultural phenomenon. You got to give it credit.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got to give J.K. Rowling credit. She may say some politically problematic things, whatever. Man, she is bringing home the cash money.
Female billionaire author.
Yeah. She turned a book. She wrote a fucking book, and now she's a billionaire. Yeah. She's got this empire. This property is incredibly popular with huge staying power. Generations of kids are reading it and getting excited about it. It's something else. I got to give that credit.
No, she really knew what she was doing, man.
Yeah.
So you guys should let us know what you think about Harry Potter. You can email us at sourcepodcast@gmail.com. We're on Twitter @sourcepodcast. And you can rate us on iTunes and leave us feedback.
Find us on iTunes, leave a review that's positive and lovely. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm @GynoStar. That's GynoStar.
Oh, and I'm at Rosie Marks, RosieMarx. And that's on Twitter as well.
Yeah, we want to hear your thoughts. And Rosie, you're going to be at Comic-Con, right?
Oh, I am. I'm going to be at Comic-Con. So come on to my Twitter and find out where I'm going to be, because I'm doing a bunch of panels.
So if you're going to be at Comic-Con in San Diego, go see one of Rosie's panels. Go say hi to her. Yes. If you really hate her thoughts on Harry Potter, you throw some Rotten Tomatoes at her or whatever you think.
Yes, I'll probably be in Harry Potter cosplay, so you'll be able to find me.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Tomato the Slytherin.
Post pics.
Yeah. See you next week, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye.